You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome to Students Incorporated, a podcast exploring the topics of business, education, technology, and design. I'm your host, Mr. Jason. Join me weekly as my team and I produce content that's informative, positive, fun, and uplifting. Episodes include student conversations, interviews with thought leaders, and inspirational stories with an international flavor. This podcast is created and produced with the help of students from the International Community School of Bangkok. Hello and welcome back. I'm Mr. Jason and I'll be your host. Our two co-hosts for the first segment will be Chanya and Premi, and we are joined by several special guests from the ICS varsity girls basketball team and one of their coaches. We've asked them to come in and talk about the topic of what it takes to be a champion. Then for segment two, we'll continue with part five of our story, The Secrets of El Dorado. But first, let's hear our quote of the day and get some headline sports news.
Hey everyone, our quote from the day comes from Patty Burke. She said, "What does it take to be a champion? Desire, dedication, determination, concentration, and the will to win." This quote emphasizes that being a champion requires a strong desire to succeed, as well as the unwavering dedication to one's goals. Additionally, determination and concentration are key components in achieving greatness, along with a strong will to win and overcome challenges. Overall, this message highlights the importance of winning mentally and the relentless drive to succeed. And that's our quote of the day. Now, on to some headline sports news.
Thank you. Here's some headline sports news from around the world. Are you ready for the Olympics? With just over 100 days until the opening ceremony, the 2024 Summer Olympic Games will take place in Paris, France. There will be 41 venues scattered throughout France, accommodating 41 different sports. Four additional sporting events have been introduced in these games. They are skateboarding, surfing, breaking, and sport climbing. The competition will be spread out over 19 days from July 26th to August 11th. There will be a total of 10,500 participants with the hopes that over a billion people from around the world will be watching. For the sake of the Olympics, some of Paris's landmarks have been incorporated into competition venues in order to put Paris on display for the world to see. Additionally, the French Development Agency has also partnered with Paris 2024 in order to form an incubation program that will provide support and funding to 20-some elite athletes for environmental or entrepreneurship projects. Before watching the Olympics, you'll have plenty of European football to watch in June. This year's Euros soccer tournament will be held in Germany, where there will be a total of 24 teams from qualifying countries playing. As the host nation, Germany will be playing in the opening match in Bracket A against Scotland at the Munich Football Arena on the 14th of June. Bracket match play will continue until the finals, which will be on the 14th of July at Berlin's Old Olympic Stadium. There are many prospective winners this year since a number of the teams boast strong performances. And finally, from the United States, the annual NCAA Division I college basketball tournament, also known as March Madness, just wrapped up this week with one men's and one women's national championship team. The results are in. For the men, UConn Huskies beat the Purdue Boilermakers 75-60. And for the women, South Carolina Gamecocks beat the Iowa Hawkeyes 87-75. It's worthy to note that South Carolina's women's team had a perfect season this year, winning 38 games with no losses. Iowa women's overall season record this year was 34-5, led by arguably the league's most prolific scorer who broke record after record this year, Caitlin Clark of Iowa. She will be heading to the WNBA next year as the number one overall draft pick. And that ends your headline sports news from around the world. We are back for our first segment of this episode, and we are joined by Coach Mike and several varsity girls basketball players who just ended their senior basketball season. They're here to talk with us about the topic of what it takes to be a champion. Premi will get us started with our first question.
Hello, and thank you so much for coming on the show. Could you please introduce yourself, tell us what grade you're in, and what position you play on the basketball team?
Hi, my name is Proud, and I'm in 12th grade. I am point guard on the basketball team.
Hi, my name is Pun, and I'm a senior, and I play post and wing.
Hi, my name is Emma, and I'm a senior at ICS, and I play center, post, or whatever you like to call it.
All right, nice. And we welcome one of your coaches. Hello, Mr. Mike. Could you introduce yourself and tell us how long you've been at ICS and what you do?
So I've been at ICS for almost 15 years now. I've been teaching elementary PE during that time and coaching basketball the entire time as well. But I haven't coached girls the entire time. I started coaching girls basketball in 2018.
That's great. Our next question is for the basketball girls. Can you share some of the most memorable moments you've made this past varsity basketball season and what makes these moments so special?
I'd have to say the most memorable times for me have been spending time with my teammates at ACSE in Hong Kong. Of course, like the championship game and winning that was like very memorable, but I feel like the small talks in like the rooms at night and just hanging out, having fun and like laughing and like spending time together was like one of the most memorable times I've spent, not just for this season, but for my basketball career in general.
So for me, it's pretty much the same as Proud. The most memorable one would be like at the ACSE tournament, because I think it's the first time that this batch of girls goes like overseas. So I think it's really like exciting for us, and we were having like a really great time. And what stuck out to me the most was like when we were losing and then nobody gave up, and we decided to keep going, and we're getting in this thing together and we're winning this together. So that's just one of the most memorable things that I remember from this season.
I think I would definitely have to agree with Proud and Pun, but if I have to say something different, I would say that this team really has a way of making anything memorable, whether that is playing Chubby Bunny or whether that is crying in our rooms together because we lost or celebrating a win or eating strawberries on the side of the road. This team really has a way to make anything a memory that you're going to take with you forever. So I think that just the girls on the basketball team are my favorite part of this season and of the basketball team, just getting to know them and to be really become a family.
Those are definitely such fun and unique, memorable moments. Okay, our next question is kind of a follow-up. It is, how do you feel you've grown as athletes and individuals over the course of your time here playing?
I've been playing basketball since like fifth grade, but I've been on the varsity team since eighth grade. So it's been quite a long time, and I feel like I've grown a lot over this time, especially because I've seen players before me and how they dealt with the team, and especially being captain, I feel like listening to others and taking what they have to say into account and making sure that the decisions I make are the best for everyone. It's not just for this basketball team, but I feel like it's an important skill that I've learned that will stay with me as I move on to college next year.
So for me, I feel like I've also been in the varsity team for like 4 years. So I feel like I also have grown a lot. I think that I've matured a lot from like the past 4 years, because I have to make decisions on the court and like also leading many like younger classmen. And also I'm one of the four seniors this year. So I have to like act as somewhat like a leader to the younger classmen to show them that, oh, this is this is like varsity girls and this is what we do. And I feel like as individuals, I feel like I learned how to like work as a team and also not just like just work alone, but also support other people in my team and also care for them and not just like making like winning or like losing a game make them feel like depressed or feel down. Also to cheer them up as one of the seniors. That's some of the things that I've learned throughout like my season as a basketball player.
I think that if we talk about developing as an athlete in general, that goes across many sports that you've played. So I've played basketball and volleyball at ICS, and I think that this year being co-captains with Proud on the volleyball team has taught me to, one, be more culturally sensitive, because as a Western athlete, being on a team with Asian athletes, it tends to be different. The way that you speak, the way that you address things, and the way that you handle situations like losing, like winning, and the way that they respond to that has taught me how to adjust to where I am now and the culture I am now. And I think that also helped Proud to adjust to how I speak and how I handle things. And that really taught me to be more culturally sensitive. And that is something that I'm going to take into university, where it might not be as diverse as ICS, but will be similar. So that is a lesson that I definitely take with me. And also just learning the concept of we over me is something that I've definitely developed throughout playing sports at ICS, that when you lose, you don't just lose as an individual, you don't pull back and handle it on your own, but that you actually take it to your team and that you lose as a team. And you also get better as a team. Something that my volleyball coach told me was that you're as good as the worst player on your team. And I think that that is something that I genuinely do take with me and have learned this year more than anything, that you need to build each other up because you cannot win a game on your own.
Yeah, that's definitely some like really valuable insights and advice. So thank you so much for sharing that. Our next question is for Mr. Mike. Just like your players are part of a team, you're also part of a coaching team. Could you share with us some of the principles of your coaching team?
Absolutely. So Mr. Jack is the head coach and I'm the assistant coach. And so within a game, we would maybe be referred to as head coach and bench coach. And we kind of have two main principles that we use. The first has to do with communication with the players. So as head coach, Mr. Jack communicates with the players that are on the court, telling them what plays we're going to run, what defense we're going to play, and just giving them direction. While my role as bench coach is to communicate with the players that are out of the game, the ones that are on the bench, making sure that if they're going in the game, they know what they need to be doing, the ones that come out, trying to correct mistakes if mistakes were made, if corrections need to be made. And so that's the first principle that we use that's related to communication. The second principle has to do with our roles as head coach and bench coach as well, where Mr. Jack is keeping track of what's going on in the game and choosing what strategies we're going to use. My role on the bench is to also keep track of fouls and make sure that he knows who's in foul trouble, both on our team and on the other team. And also just paying attention to the game when I'm not communicating with players on the bench. And then at the right moments, if I feel the need to say something to him, to give him my perspective on how things are working, then I share that with him as well. Those two roles come together a little bit during timeouts and in between quarters. At that time, when all the team is together, we sometimes will take turns talking to the team and sharing the perspectives and things that we're seeing, things that we think are going well, things that we think need to improve. And so there we kind of have things blended together. But I think that it's really important for us as coaches to have clear principles and clear roles that we use, because it helps us make sure that we don't have conflict with each other during the game, and it makes sure that things run as smoothly as possible.
Yeah, for sure. Here's a follow-up question. We're curious. Does the coaching team have to adapt each season because the girls' basketball team dynamics change each year? You know, like, for instance, some girls would graduate and move on, and then some new players come onto the team?
Definitely. So with this group of seniors that's graduating this year, we lose a lot of our post size, a lot of our rebounding, a lot of our defense by the rim. And looking at the players that we'll have next year, we're going to have a lot shorter team overall. And I think it's really important as coaches not to choose the system you're going to run and stick to it no matter what, but make sure that the strengths of your players are accounted for. And so already looking at next year, we think that we're going to have to change the way we play, and we're going to have to try and run fast, go faster, and play a more up-tempo game, because we're not going to have size to play a half-court game quite as much. And so it's definitely important and something that we take into consideration every single year.
This next question goes back to the girls, and it's about your coaches. We know Mr. Jack couldn't be in the studio with us today, but Mr. Mike is here. So, could you share a piece of advice you received from your coaches that had a significant impact on you, not only as a player, but as a person as well?
The piece of advice that meant a lot to me this year that I actually received from Coach Mike was to let go of the things that you can't control. Because the only thing that you can control is how you act on those things and respond to those things. That is a piece of advice that I'll take with me into many things and not just sports. I think that that is a super valuable thing to learn for anyone, is that the thing that's in control is how you react, whether that is in life when maybe somebody does something to you or something happens in your life. You can't control what somebody else does. You can't control in a game what a referee does, and you can't control the things that happen to you in life. However, you can control what you do and your response to that. So I think that was really valuable to me this ACSE tournament. As I wasn't playing my best basketball, I was able to, instead of getting super upset about that, to respond with being able to support my teammates and to contribute in different ways.
So one of the many advices that Mr. Jack and Mr. Mind have said throughout the season was that to have fun while you're playing on the court and not care a lot about winning, because winning doesn't matter, and then it doesn't mean the world. It's not like the world is ending or anything, but just enjoy your game of basketball because that's what you love. And I feel like that's really important, because like as in my usual daily life, I like to put pressure on myself, and I feel like putting pressure on myself every day is not a good thing and it's not healthy. So I decided to enjoy whatever life I'm experiencing and also enjoy like whatever events that have come up during my path, and also like enjoy everything in my life so that I don't regret it. Yeah, so that's one of the many advices that I learned.
For me, this advice was given by Coach Jack, actually to the whole team, at a tournament when we weren't playing so well. He was talking about how opportunities in life, they come in and they go, and we just need to like learn how to make the most out of these opportunities, because the team this year is actually like really good team. It's like one of the best teams I've played on. But when we're not playing our best, we can look like the worst team I've been on. So when Mr. Jack said this, he was actually really mad, but like I took it in a good way, and I just thought of how like what he was saying was really true, and it also applied to other parts of my life. When he said that like opportunities will come in and they'll go out, and we just have to make the most out of them, I thought of like my college application process as well, and what I'll be doing in like university next year. And so I just really thought like this advice is really valuable, because it really like means a lot, because like when these opportunities come in and you don't make the most of them, they'll just go out and it'll be like nothing happened. But if you're able to like make something out of it, that's when like better things will keep coming in your life. So I really like value this advice that Mr. Jack gave this year.
Thank you so much for sharing. That is definitely some great valuable advice. Here's another question for the girls. Team chemistry is crucial in basketball. Can you talk about how your team has worked together this season to overcome challenges and obstacles?
I think the basketball team this year hasn't changed much from last year. We only lost one senior last year, so it was not too hard to like get back into the team once the season started. But there were still a few problems that happened within the team. And so I feel like a lot of it is just communication and spending a lot of time together and supporting each other. Even though this might sound a little bit cliche, but like even though like we're not best friends, we're family, and like sometimes family like don't like each other, but like that's fine. You just have to like deal with it and move on, and like you still love each other and you still want the best for each other, but sometimes it might come out in the wrong way, and so you just have to like know how to deal with it and move on with it. And I think we had a really fun season this year with the group of girls we had, and yeah, I really enjoyed it because of like the love and like the bond we were able to create within the season.
For me, I feel like most of our girls, we're really close on and off of the court because we've been together for like several seasons. Like me, Proud, and Emma, we've been together like for 4 years, and I feel like we know each other's weaknesses and strengths, and I feel like that is why we tend to play really well together. And also we had a lot of practice and a lot of like off-season practice and like weekend practice. So I feel like because of these practices, we tend to grow as a team and we know how like how we play with each other best. So that's why our team chemistry is like really good this year, and it has been like the best, like one of the best girls that I've played with my entire life. So yeah,
I think that sometimes some of our biggest challenges and obstacles were ourselves and the way that we viewed our own gameplay and how we viewed the team. So I think that a lot of pressure was put on us by ourselves. I think that our coaches definitely, yes, put some of this pressure because of how good we were this year and how we had definitely had a big chance to win. But I think that when the tournament day came, the most pressure came from ourselves. And so a really big obstacle that we had to overcome as a team was the one loss we had at ACSC. If we had not lost that, we would only have 2 games the next day. But when we did lose, we had 4 more games to play, 1 that same day and 3 the next day. So this loss was really hard on us, and our team actually kind of divided after this loss. And it was really hard, and we even had a point where we were like, we're never coming back from this. But that afternoon, we all came together, and we just spent time together. We cried together that evening. We talked, and we figured it all out. But that is just something, like Proud says, that you do as a family. Like, you all know each other's weaknesses and strengths, and so you know how to use that for either positive things and negative things, which is why we sometimes clashed and sometimes didn't. But we all came together that night and we talked through how we were feeling and how we wanted to move forward from this. And so I think that truly that evening with the team being able to be vulnerable like that together is the reason that we won ACSC.
Thank you so much for sharing. And actually, Emma, what you said kind of connects to the next question that we have. And knowing that you guys won a recent tournament, which is a huge, huge milestone, could you talk about the recent tournament you won and what it was like to play that many games in such a short time and then come out as the champions?
Well, first, physically playing that many games is awful. We had a massage gun and spray at the ready on the bench and afterwards, so everyone was limping to the airport at the end, but at least we had a trophy in hand, so that was good. However, it is also mentally exhausting to play that many games, to just before every game, be mentally ready to play and to, well, not just play, but also to be there to support your teammates, whether you're on the bench, whether you're on the court, and to be able to handle the pressure that comes from your teammates, the crowd, your coaches. It is mentally exhausting as well. However, of course, winning ACSC makes that all worth it. But yeah, it is super exhausting to do that. I think many athletes know that playing many games in a day is tiring. But especially after losing a game you didn't expect to lose, it becomes even more exhausting and more of a mental battle, which we had to overcome.
So I feel like it's really pressuring and nerve-wracking because we have to win every game and there's no other options rather than winning. We cannot lose, because if we lose a game, then there's no opportunity for us to get back up. So after losing that game with Grace, everybody was feeling really down and we kind of lost a little bit of hope. But then after our team talk during the evening, we feel like everybody's not ready to give up yet. And that's why the next day we kind of give everything in and put in our best efforts. And that is why we win the ACSC.
I think playing ACSC was a very unique experience because of how both, like Pun and Emma said, physically demanding and mentally demanding it is. It's, of course, very physically demanding because you're playing, like, 3-4 games a day when, like, even professional players, they don't play that many games in one day. But it's also very physically demanding because of, like, the things that are going on all around you. There's a part of you that's at the basketball tournament and your mind is there. But there's also a part of you that's back in Bangkok thinking about, like, the classes you're missing, the tests you're missing. And, like, you're skipping, like, 4 days of school, which is, like, not easy already. And then there's also, like, the part of you that, like, you're in another country with, like, a bunch of your close friends. And you just want to have fun. You just want to go hang out. You just want to, like, enjoy the nice weather, go out and eat some good food. But then at the same time, you really want to win. And, like, it's just a bunch of emotions. And with the game that Pun and Emma have been talking about that we lost, we actually lost by 2 points to Grace, which made it all a lot harder because of how close it was and how we all knew that like we could have won that game, but some mistakes here and there just didn't like made us lose the game. And all of us knew that it's still possible, but it would be hard and all of us would have to give it our all, both physically and mentally. And right now we're talking about like 4 days into a tournament and we've played like 6 games, maybe something like that, a bunch of games already. All our physical strength and also our mental strength, it was all dwindling and like we're all very tired. And with this tournament, I just think that it was a great experience, but it was also very tiring and it also taught me a lot of things along the way.
Thank you so much again for sharing. And I think like a lot of times, like we'd see in chapel that like you guys won, like we're ACSC, but like we wouldn't know how much effort or like all the obstacles that like went into going to that. And Pun, you're right, like that pressure must be crazy. Like you only have to win all the games that you're playing on all in one day too, right? And then, or like the close score. I remember like watching that game in JCHL. I remember watching and it was like you were like Grace was winning and then you were winning and it just like went on and on. Yeah, that's crazy. So thank you so much for sharing. I think it's like we understand a lot more now, or like what goes into that, and it must be so pressuring. So a shout out to you guys for doing all of that and still winning. And here's one more question for the girls before we ask Mr. Mike the same question. What advice would you give to younger athletes who aspire to pursue a varsity sport during their high school career?
So a piece of advice that I would give to younger athletes is don't give up. I know that sounds cliche because people always tell you to never give up, but I genuinely mean it. Whether it is you don't make the team the first time you try out or the second time or the third time, it is okay. I think that all three of us have experienced some sort of failure, some maybe not getting as much playing time or not making the team, or feeling like you're working so hard and not getting what you deserve on the court and just the approval from your coaches. However, I truly encourage you to keep going because it does get better, I promise you. Coaches will start to see your hard work. You will get the playing time that you deserve and you will begin to see that the work that you're putting in is coming out and you're going to see results. So yeah, I genuinely think that that's a piece of advice that I would like to give to younger athletes.
Once you made it to the team, I think one of the advice that I want to give younger athletes is that put in your best efforts, because when you prove to the coaches that you deserve being on the team, you kind of have to show that you really deserve to be here and just kind of be eager to always play, to always come to practices, and put like dedicate your time into practicing and like training and all that, because you have like this one shot to prove yourself that you deserve to be a part of the varsity team. So you kind of have to have like some dedication and also enjoy every moment you play on the court during a game, because you only get one shot to like perform your best. So not like one shot, like just get your chance to shine. So I feel like you have to enjoy every bit of moment you have on the court, because you enjoy basketball, you love basketball, and that's why you have to show that through your performance. So that is just some of the advice I want to give.
So my advice is kind of two things connected to each other. First, I wanted to say that like it's never too late to try something new. So if you want to try out a sport, it doesn't have to be varsity. It could be like club sports or something like that. Just go and try it out. And the second part of my advice would be to be really coachable, be willing to listen when other people who are better than you tell you, like give you advice, and like be ready to ask questions. And like Emma and Pun said, like it's not easy when you're on like a varsity team, but if you don't think you're getting what you deserve, be ready to like ask questions, and so you can figure out what you need to work on. It's never really too late to try something new, but when you do start it, give it your all and like be ready to learn, not go there with the mentality of like you already know what you're doing. So yeah, like just listen to others and yeah, ask a lot of questions, and there's nothing you can't do if you like really put your mind to it. So yeah.
Great. I would just like to add one thing, a story about my first time I got playing time on the varsity team. So when I was a freshman, I made the team full-time for the first time. And I remember it was a really good team. It had Glory, Caroline, some of the best players that this program has seen. And it was the finals of the NIS tournament. And I don't know why Coach Jack decided to put me in during that game, but he put me in. And I stood on the court, and Caroline was passing in the ball. And I was wide open, so she gave me the ball. And I turned around, and I started dribbling the opposite direction towards the other team's basket. And this, I was wondering why no one was coming to guard me, but I quickly understood why. Mr. Jack yelled my name and told me to stop, so I dropped the ball, it went out of bounds, and I got subbed back out right away. That was my first experience on the varsity team. And now, my last year and last year, I've been playing full games, scoring points and really making a contribution to the team. So genuinely, I encourage you indeed to not give up, because it really, really does get better. And the more longer that you stay on the team, the more it's going to pay off.
I love that. I feel like this whole episode, we've just had like great advice after great advice. Okay, and finally, Mr. Mike, as a coach, what advice would you share with younger athletes who want to join the varsity women's basketball team at some point?
What I would say is really a bit of a combination of some of the things the girls have already said, which is hard work. The effort that she put in is noticed. The coaches see it. The other players see it. They see how hard you work. They see whether you're working hard or whether you're not. And that's something that will serve you well in life. Certainly, if you're trying to make the basketball team, it's my advice for you, but it's a character trait that's going to serve you well beyond the basketball court. So first is working hard, and then I would also say, like Proud said, is being coachable. That's huge. As a coach, when I have players that listen to me, when I have players that are willing to take my advice and try and do the things that I think will help them, it really makes a big difference. And to kind of put those things together, I think it's really important in that hard work, don't just play basketball during the basketball season. You know, if you've never played before, that's a place to start. Try and make the basketball team. But playing basketball in the off season is really, really valuable. And that's really the best place for you to work on your individual skills. So I would encourage you to set a SMART goal for yourself. It doesn't have to be big or complicated, but something that gives you a goal, something that gives you something to aim for, and then discipline yourself to stick to it. I think you'll find that really will have a big impact by doing those things, and it will help you become a better basketball player, and that's going to be something that will help your chances of making a varsity team in the future.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us again, and thank you so much for that great advice and for telling us all about the stories. Thank you so much again.
And that ends segment one of this episode. Thanks again for taking time to come on our podcast and share some of your own personal thoughts on the topic of what it takes to be a champion. And thanks for providing our listeners with some valuable advice and insights, as the principles learned can go far beyond just sports. Okay, stick around as we continue with part five of our story in our second segment. Part five is titled The Secret Society. We'll be right back after this short PSA.
1, 2, 3, 4. Attention all ACSC girls soccer players and fans. The tournaments have already started. From Wednesday, April 10th to Saturday, April 13th, teams from across Asia will battle it out for the coveted championship title. Come cheer for our ICS Eagles, show school spirit, and witness some of the most skillful and exciting soccer matches you'll ever see. Whether you're a soccer fanatic or just looking for a good time, this tournament is not to be missed. So mark your calendars, gather your friends, and get ready to experience the thrill of ACSC girls soccer at its finest. For the last part of our PSA, join us from Thursday, April 25th to Saturday, April 27th for our Tri-Sports tournament at ICS. Tri-Sports are a test of endurance, determination, and skills. Our students have been training hard to showcase their abilities for all of you. So grab your friends, wear your school colors, and come cheer on our athletes as they play volleyball, basketball, and soccer. Let's create a fun and energetic atmosphere to motivate our athletes and celebrate their accomplishments. Your cheers and encouragement can make a world of difference in their performance. See you at the Tri-Sports event, and let's show our school spirit together.
We are back for our second segment, and we continue with part five titled The Secret Society. This is part five of the larger story titled The Secrets of El Dorado. But first, Chania will give us a quick recap of part four from our last episode.
In the last episode, the team delves into the area's history, uncovering legends and stories that suggest a pattern of mysteries. While they were exploring the past, the team also found a connection between the past events and the current disappearance. Suspicion and tension rise as some members start to suspect Professor Hawthorne.
Thank you, Chania. And without further ado, let's dive back into our story where we join Ava, Lily, Sierra, Ethan, and the professor once again. We find Ethan and the professor on Rob's Peak as they have discovered something on the video from the drone Ethan had flown into the first mine location they were exploring together. They are both looking down at the drone footage on the tablet Ethan is holding.
Ethan blurts out, "Professor, is that what I think it is?"
"Yes, it looks like it," the professor responds. The drone's high-definition camera had captured something etched into one of the side walls in the mine shaft, right to the left of the sealed-off vertical shaft. This was the same place the professor was standing for a few moments before the drone caught up with him. Professor Hawthorne says as he looks up at Ethan, "I couldn't see that symbol etched in the rock wall when I was there. It looks to be quite an old etching, not very deep into the rock and very faint and small in appearance. It looks really old, and it also looks similar in the style to the Chinese symbols on both the note and the manuscript."
Ethan replies, "It looks like the same style of Chinese character that's on the note from Yi Chen and in that old manuscript you have."
The professor nods his head in agreement as he says, "Yes, it does, Ethan." Speaking out loud, the professor says, "The camera on that drone must be super sensitive to be able to capture those small details. If we had cell service out here, we could look up the meaning of that symbol. I bet it comes from the same cipher chart as the other symbols." Professor Hawthorne asks Ethan to save the image to his device and suggests they make their way to the second and third mine sites before the day gets away from them. The professor looks at Ethan and says, "All right, buddy, hope you are ready for some rugged trails. The paths to the second and third mines are not easily accessible." As the professor turns around and gestures to Ethan to follow him, he says, "But hey, it's part of our adventure today."
Ethan takes a deep breath and thinks to himself, "Great. Don't think I signed up for this type of adventure today, though." The two move further into the rugged mountain terrain towards the second mine, which is on the west side of the mountain and at a slightly lower elevation from the current location.
About 20 minutes later, the two reach a clearing on the west side of the mountain and take a quick break to catch their breath, eat a snack, and drink some water. The professor looks over at Ethan, who is finding a place to sit down, and says, "The elevation can get you if you're not used to it. We need to stay hydrated as well." The professor notices Ethan digging around in his backpack for his trail mix as he continues. The second mine is just over that small ledge beyond the clump of trees. We are almost there. Maybe another 5-10 minutes max. Once we get there, I'll check it out again and see if the front metal gate is open. The entrance of the mine is usually closed up and locked up. I'm not sure I'll have access to it like the first mine. I guess we'll see when we get there.
Ethan is snacking on some trail mix he made at the cafe while listening to the professor talk about the plan for the second mine shaft. "If it's all right with you, Professor, I'll just stay outside the mine and test my drone again. I want to gather some data at this altitude and get some more footage of this side of the mountain."
"Sounds good. Okay, let's get going," the professor says as he turns and starts walking in that direction.
As Ethan is standing up and starting to walk, he hears a ding from his phone. He thinks to himself, oh, cell service must reach the side of the mountain from the valley below. Good. I can check to see what the symbol stands for from that old Chinese telegraphic code sheet I found online. And I can check out my cafe to see how things are going. Hopefully sales are up.
After a few minutes, the two reach the second mine site. Professor Hawthorne steps up to the entrance of the mine, something that can't be seen from the rough trail because of the overgrown underbrush. As he pushes his way through the underbrush, the professor turns his head and shouts back to Ethan, who is following him. Yep, just like I thought. Looks like the gate is shut and padlocked. Oh, wait. The padlock is either broken or it's been cut. That's interesting.
Ethan looks up as he brushes some dirt and thorns off his pants and says, that doesn't seem normal. Maybe some tourists got a little carried away.
Yeah, it definitely is not normal. Not many people know about this site, especially the tourists. And not many people want to hike all this way anyway. Well, I'm going to go walk into the mine a little ways with my flashlight and see what I can see. You wait out here as I'll only be a few minutes. If my memory serves me right, this mine is not very deep, so I won't be but a few minutes.
As the professor removes the broken padlock, opens the metal gate, and enters the mine, Ethan gets on his tablet and checks if there's cell coverage. He discovered there is weak coverage, but just enough to retrieve the image of the telegraphic code chart he saved to his cloud storage device. As he pulls up the code chart, he notices that the symbol he and the professor found in the first mine translate as a minus symbol. Ethan makes a mental note of it and then sees a notification pop up on his tablet. The notification is from his custom tracking software that is connected to the tracking devices that he was testing earlier. Interesting, Ethan thinks to himself as he pulls up the tracking software app on his tablet. Because the coverage is so terrible at this location, the high-resolution map he's using in the software is loading very slowly. He taps his fingers on the tablet as he patiently waits. Come on, Ethan says softly as he watches the map slowly load on his screen.
Meanwhile, Professor Hawthorne makes his way down the narrow mine shaft of the second mine site, turning on his flashlight as the passageway gets darker and darker. As the professor is looking down at the ground, so as not to stumble on any loose rocks or other debris, he notices footprints in some of the soft dirt areas of the path. He makes a mental note of it and keeps moving. The professor comes to a Y intersection in the mine shaft. There's an option to veer left on the path or veer right on the path. Both of these paths lead deeper into the mountain, and the professor is not equipped to go any further. So he decides to turn around and head back out of the mine. As he is turning, he flashes his flashlight on the rock walls and right away notices the same symbol etched into the wall that Ethan had discovered with his drone in the first mine they explored. The professor pulls out his phone and takes a photo of it before walking back out of the mine and back out the gate and broken padlock. As the professor exits the mine, he yells out to Ethan, who's standing a little distance away, "Hey, Ethan, I found another one of those symbols sketched into the rock. It looks like the same symbol we found at the first mine." The professor walks over to Ethan and shows him the photo he took of the symbol and asks, "So what do you think? It's the same symbol, right?"
Ethan replies, "Yeah, that's the same symbol. While you were in there, I was able to get a weak cell signal. I pulled the telegraphic coding chart to see if that symbol was listed, and sure enough, the symbol appears to translate to the minus sign. So both the first mine and the second mine have the symbol carved into the wall of the shaft, and they are both close in proximity to the entrance of the mine." Ethan could tell the professor was thinking by the expression the professor had on his face while Ethan was talking. So Ethan asks, "What is it? What are you thinking about?"
"I think that symbol actually translates to negative. Even though the telegraphic code chart has it listed as the minus sign, I believe it's like a marker or message and it means negative, you know, the opposite of positive. I think it's a sign that communicates to anyone who comes into the mine that this mine produced negative results." The professor goes on as Ethan listens. "So my assumption is that there was no gold found in this mine, similar to the first one."
By this time in Ethan and the professor's conversation, Ethan noticed that the map had loaded on his tablet. Ethan said, "It gets even more weird. Check this out." Ethan went on to explain to the professor that he slipped one of his small paperclip tracking devices in Lily's backpack as she left the cafe yesterday. He goes on, According to the software I built for my small tracking devices, it works up here as well. The tracking software is showing that Lily's backpack is located at the reservoir. Ethan finishes the last part of his statement as somewhat of a question. Although, this other dot on the map here is us. This is the device that's on the old manuscript you brought with us. Ethan says this very excitedly as he is very pleased in the range and power the small tracking devices contain.
The professor looks up from his phone after finding he has weak cell service and says, okay, well, maybe the trio decided to go check out the second set of coordinates. They did take a photo of Chen's note yesterday before leaving the cafe. I mean, if Ava is a journalist at the Sacramento Bee, then she's probably doing some investigating herself. The professor continues, it's getting late, so let's go check out that third mine site. I don't want to be hiking out here in the dark. He points toward the direction they need to go and says, it's actually not far from here, maybe about a 10-minute hike. Mines 2 and 3 are much closer in proximity together than mine 1.
Ethan grabs his gear and follows the professor as they head south toward the third mine site. As they are walking, Ethan asks the professor, so professor, what do you think this all means?
The professor stops for a moment, takes off one of his hiking shoes, and as he is shaking out several small pebbles from his shoe, he says, I'm not sure yet what this all means. I mean, all of it seems to be connected in some way. At least the evidence seems to be revealing that to us. In these types of moments, I try to stick to my archaeological principle, which is to allow the evidence to point us to the truth, and hopefully it will help us solve whatever mystery we've stumbled upon, especially with the disappearance of Chen. Oh, that reminds me, when we get back to town, I need to stop in at the county sheriff's office and file a missing persons report about Chen and notify them about the broken padlock and the footprints I discovered at the second mine site.
Several minutes later, the professor and Ethan arrive at the third mine site. This site is different from the other two in that the entrance is larger in size and the mine's house seems to be wider and taller than the previous two. Ethan looks over to the professor and says, since there's no gate and padlock on this mine, why don't you let me fly the drone into the shaft and see how far it goes? That should save you from having to walk in there again. We can just sit outside the entrance of the mine and study the drone footage.
The professor responds, yeah, good idea. My feet hurt anyways. Plus, the drone can cover more ground and faster. The professor glances up and watches as the drone whizzes over his head toward the entrance of the mine and then watches as it disappears into the black hole in the mountain. Several minutes later, he hears Ethan yell out,
hey, Professor, I found something. Check this out. Ethan sends his drone into the mine shaft about 100 yards, similar in distance of what he had done for the first mine shaft. Ethan switches back and forth between regular, infrared, and black light mode on his camera. He's trying to capture as many features as possible. Ethan bursts out, and there it is, another symbol etched into the rock, and it also appears there about three different directions the shaft leads. They all slope down towards the center of the mountain. Ethan could not send his drone down any of the three shafts, at least he did not want the connection to be interrupted between his tablet and the drone. He was unsure of the distance and didn't want to risk losing his drone if the connection broke. So he flew the drone back out and then landed it safely at his and the professor's feet right outside the entrance.
The professor asks Ethan, so is the symbol the camera captured the same as what we saw in the first and second mines?
No, it's different, Ethan answers. Ethan pulls up the code chart again and finds the symbol on the code chart. Look at this. The symbol from the third mine translates to the plus symbol.
The professor interrupts and says, yes and no, Ethan. Yes, it's a plus symbol, but it translates to positive. That's what that means. The first and second mine sites indicate a negative, and the third mine site indicates a positive. This kind of makes sense then. I'm thinking out loud here as I'm making some assumptions from our findings. But it's quite possible that the reason there are only three mines on this mountain is because the third mine was dug, was the mine that ended up producing all the gold. So why dig more mines if you don't have to? I mean, back then and at that time, remember this is back in 1849, digging a mine was hard and laborious work. If they struck gold veins in the rock in this third mine, then why dig a fourth or fifth or sixth if you didn't have to, right?
Right, that makes sense, Ethan replies. Professor, there's something else in the video that you might want to look at. I switched back and forth between several camera features, regular, infrared, and black light mode. Well, when the camera was on the black light mode, it picked up some features in the rock at the entrance to the first inner shaft. I didn't fly the drone into any of the free inner shafts, but at the entrance, there seemed to be some features or element in the rock that stands out. It doesn't appear to be rock.
As the professor is looking at the video of what Ethan is talking about, he reaches into his side pants pocket and pulls out a pocket knife and tells Ethan, "Wait here and I'll be right back. I need to scrape off a sample of whatever substance is in that rock. I've not seen that before." The professor walks into the mine with a small empty snack baggie he got from Ethan's backpack, his pocket knife, and his flashlight. About 7 minutes later, the professor emerges from the mine entrance, the sun already starting to go down, holds up the baggie, which contains small shards of what look like an off-white substance, and says, "Ethan, we have an interesting discovery here that I have not seen before on any of my past digs. It kind of looks like salt. I scraped some samples from the rock wall, the best I could do with my pocket knife, but it should be enough to get it tested at the lab and see what it is. It's getting dark and we need to hike back."
Ethan and Professor Hawthorne seem to have discovered something interesting. Meanwhile, at 7 p.m., Ava meets Sierra at her house and is ready for their own adventure.
Sierra greets Ava with a smile before they drive to the reservoir where the coordinates had pointed to. Sierra is driving and Ava sits shotgun, blasting pop music all while helping Sierra navigate.
A little over an hour, 3 playlists, and 23 songs later, they reach the reservoir.
"That's interesting," Sierra says, pointing to the cars parked as they pull up to the reservoir spill dam, which is situated on the southwest side of the reservoir. "It's pretty late. Wouldn't tourists have left already?"
Ava frowns a little. "You're right, Sierra. I wonder why..."
They don't think too much of it, parking Sierra's car a distance away from the group of other cars parked near the walkway that goes over the dam. After they get out of the car and approach the walkway over the dam, they walk past a group of cars.
Ava notices that several cars had governmental license plates. This made her very curious and she pointed this out to Sierra as they walk past the cars. Out of instinct, Ava snaps a few photos of the license plates, thinking to herself, "You never know, these photos could be helpful."
When Ava points out the license plates to Sierra, Sierra's eyes widen. "You're right, Ava."
Ava responds, "Just to be safe, I took a few photos. They could come in handy, or they could be used as evidence, or they could just be part of our insurance policy if something were to happen."
Sierra shoots Ava a weird and worried look. "Good call, I guess. I mean, I hope we are not in danger." Sierra nods before pointing to the walkway on top of the dam. "Let's go explore that part."
"Oh yeah, we should," Ava says as they start walking in that direction. She continues, "Remember coming here in high school and just hanging out with our friends? Those are good times, remember?"
"Yep. Best hangout spot," Sierra smiles, closing her eyes as she thinks back to the good old high school days.
With that, Ava and Sierra make their way up to the walkway over the dam, chatting about old classmates and teachers. On either side of the dam, there were small concrete buildings with small half windows. These buildings have a steel door, usually locked, and the building house control switches, and a small office area that is used for operations and maintenance of the dam. This reservoir provides water to the valley surrounding this area, and the dam controls the flow of the water at different times of the year. Suddenly, Ava spots a light coming from one of the small half windows of the closest maintenance building to the parking lot. It's not terribly bright, but Ava thinks it's unusual for it to be on at this time of the night. She's never seen workers here at this time in the past.
Ava stops abruptly as they're walking. Sierra notices this and follows Ava's line of sight. She could also swear she heard something, so she asks Ava, "Did you hear that?"
"Hear what?" Ava asks.
"You can't?" Sierra says, repeating the words she hears in a hushed tone. "Here, listen." "I don't think so. That's even more risky."
Ava nods. Yeah, I can now, but not so clearly. Let's get closer." With that, the two girls inch closer towards the half window, which is open, though they're careful not to make too much noise in case someone heard them.
They listened for a few more minutes, but the voices had become fainter and fainter, until even Sierra herself couldn't hear anything. Sierra mutters underneath her breath, wishing there was a way for them to be able to eavesdrop. Glancing around, Sierra spots a small wooden picnic table. She nods to Ava to help her, and they both quickly pick the small table up and move it close to the window. The window sat higher on the side of the building, and the two girls could not see into it without having something to stand on. The two girls climb on top of the picnic table and try to peek in through the window opening. They see four or five people gathered around the table, maybe three men and two women. They couldn't see very clearly because the window was dirty and cloudy and wasn't open the entire way, but they could hear their voices very clearly now.
Ava quickly takes out her phone and opens a voice recording app. She and Sierra are standing there together at the open window, listening to the conversation happening inside. This is about to get interesting.
Sierra sees Ava's recording app open and gives her a thumbs up. Together, they hear and record the following conversation. "Don't do that. That's not smart. We might get caught," the first man says as he sits in a way at the table so his face is turned towards the open window. "Right, that's true. Or, you know, we could just do away with them. Make them disappear. Make it look like an accident," a second voice rings out, deeper this time. The first man responds, "What? You mean..." Then he gestures, making a horizontal cut across his neck with his finger. "What do you think I meant?" the second voice says. "Or we could deport them? The boy and the girl? They're not citizens, are they? Get their visas revoked and then threaten their families," a third voice says, and she sounds more collected and measured. "That's smart, but there's no guarantee they won't slip up after some time. We can't have that." The first voice, or the second voice, Sierra is not too sure. "How could anyone find out, and what if someone else finds out? What are we going to do then?" This is the first voice, Sierra sure. His voice went up several octaves higher.
"Stop. Stop panicking, you fools. I'll tell you what to do with the foreign boy and girl."
Sierra's eyebrows angled, and she exchanged puzzled glances with Ava. She could have sworn she heard that voice before. It was a little too familiar. Sierra could tell that both her and Ava were thinking the same thing at that moment, which was, could they be talking about Chen? And who is the girl they are talking about?
At that moment, the corner of the small picnic table snaps off with a loud crack from the weight of the two girls standing on it. Neither Sierra nor Ava knew that the side of the tabletop was partially rotten when they decided to stand on it.
And that ends part 5 of The Secrets of El Dorado. We are halfway through our story with 5 more parts to go. Again, if you missed any of the previous parts, you can go back and listen to those anytime, starting with episode 55. Tune in next episode as we continue with part 6, titled The Underground Network. As we end this episode, we again would like to thank several of the girls' varsity basketball team members and Coach Mike for joining us on this segment and talking about what it takes to be a champion. And as always, this podcast would not be possible without the hard work and support of our international student production team.
All music and sound effects are courtesy of Pixabay.com, a vibrant community of creatives sharing copyright-free images, videos, and music.
And we are signing off until next time. We are Students Incorporated, because your voice matters.